Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this pre-recorded program via remote from Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, August 13, 2020. President Salva Kiir declares state of emergency in two areas in South Sudan.
And as a result of that, the government through the Ministry of Humanitarian Affairs should be able to come up with a new strategy of realigning the humanitarian service to the people of Jonglei State.
And an unknown number of families are displaced in Tonch East County.
I am now with only one child, and other five children are still missing. Their mother is missing too. My brother, my sister, and my mother all are still missing until now.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir has declared a state of emergency in Jonglei State and the Greater Pibor Administrative Area, devastated by floods. The state of emergency will give the government and aid workers a window of opportunity to address the humanitarian crisis in the two areas. Officials from the two areas say more than 400,000 people affected by the floods need urgent help. VOA could not independently verify the number of people affected by the floods. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from Juba.
Abraham Kuala Nyuana, professor of political science at the University of Juba, says the emergency declaration for the two areas means the government can enact action plans to quickly address the humanitarian crisis caused by the flooding and prevent further floods.
And as a result of that, the government through the Ministry of Humanitarian Affairs should be able to come up with a new strategy of realigning the humanitarian service to the people of Jonglei State.
Kuala says without practical policies to address natural disasters like floods, the emergency declaration will do nothing to address the problems facing the people in the two areas.
A state of emergency by itself is not a solution to the problems of emergency, mostly of floods. It is the policy that follow next that should be a solution. And as a result of this, it is possible that the government should be able to put in place positive strategies that will be able to control the floods in the near future. Coming next year, in the next 5 years, there will be no continuation of the flood.
Local officials say the floods forced more than 400,000 people to flee their homes, most of whom need humanitarian assistance, including food, shelter, and medical supplies. Photos shared online by people in Boroso submerged houses and farms and dead livestock, among others. Gabriel Deng Ajak, director of the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in Jonglei State, says those who are in urgent need of help are women, children, and the elderly.
I would appeal to all the partners, all the well-wishers, the donor communities and humanitarian partners to assist the people in evacuating them from where they are at the moment to higher grounds. Second, assist them with shelter materials.
Kuala says the government needs to look at long-term solutions to flooding during the dry season, such as building strong dikes and seasonal dams to control water flow. Jonglei State and the Greater Pibor Administrative Area are often hard hit by floods, especially during the height of the rainy season. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
An unknown number of people have fled their homes in Tonch East County of Warab State following fighting between civilians and a disarmament force from the South Sudan People's Defense Forces. Community leaders in the area are calling on the international community to hold the South Sudan Army accountable for allegedly killing civilians and raping women. The spokesman for the South Sudan Army says the death toll from the weekend fighting has risen to 127 people. For VOA News, Manyang David Maya reports from Juba.
Tonj East Executive Director Makwei Mabior told South Sudan in Focus this week the fighting began on Saturday after a quarrel erupted between a group of youth and soldiers in Romage Market when a soldier told one youth wearing a red piece of cloth on his head that is typically worn by cattle camp youth to remove the clothes. The fighting quickly spread, forcing thousands of people to flee their homes, according to eyewitnesses and local officials. Reached by phone from his hiding place, Tonj East resident Makol Tong says soldiers are killing civilians and raping women. Speaking in Dinka, Tong says he is still searching for several members of his family.
I am now with only one child, and other five children are still missing. Their mother is missing too. My brother, my sister, and my mother all are still missing until now. I only managed to escape with this one child.
Tong says people hiding in the bush need food and medicine.
For these 5 days we have spent here, we are surviving on wild leaves. I pick them, chew it, and give it to my child. I chew another and swallow it for myself. This is how we are surviving here.
Community leaders are urging government officials to punish two generals who led the campaign. Speaking in Dinka, Paramount Chief Mawan Dur accuses the soldiers of shooting unarmed civilians.
We are very confused. Perhaps the government of Kiir does not want us anymore. The way it is shot at us, there is no weapon they have not used against the civilians here. They have used all artilleries, including tanks. I would like to tell the government, if you have not abandoned us, if you don't have another agenda against us, rescue us from hunger and give us medical supplies.
Women in the area say soldiers have used the fighting as an opportunity to rape women. Speaking in Dinka, a woman we shall refer to as Mary to protect her privacy says she was in the market when the fighting started. Mary says she tried to escape, but a group of about 10 soldiers captured her and gang-raped her that evening.
I was trying to collect my things in the market when they caught me. They were like 10 men. Right now, my abdomen is paining and there is no hospital I can go to. Maybe I will not be alive for the next 3 days.
Community leaders like Francis Agwek are calling on the government to hold two commanders of the disarmament force accountable for the heavy loss of life.
These two guys should be brought back either to carry out the disarmament in Equatoria or in Alpha Nile, and generals from Equatoria or Alpha Nile should go and do that exercise. These two people are not useless. I am calling for accountability because these are civilians, and the issue of the government is to protect the civilians.
Agwek is urging the international community to hold soldiers and their commanders responsible for the human rights violations committed against civilians in the area. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayar in Juba.
The South Sudan Police Service says Banu Emmanuel Lokiri, a student of medicine at the University of Juba, is a prime suspect in the murder of three children who were slaughtered in Juba on August 1st. Families of their three siblings are furious about how South Sudanese have politicized the killings on the social media. One family member who sought anonymity for privacy reasons says people are hurting them with their unverified posts on the social media. The Inspector General of the South Sudan Police Service says posting misleading information on sensitive issues could amount to crime. For VOA News, David Monodanga reports from Juba.
Police arrested Babu Emmanuel Lokiri, a fourth-year student of medicine at the University of Juba, in connection with the murders of the three siblings on August 1st. Comments on Lokiri's arrest soon flooded social media platforms. Some posted images of the three victims, while others posted photographs of Lokiri on Facebook. A close relative of the slain siblings says the flood of social media posts are causing grief-stricken family members even more pain. The relative, who agreed to be recorded but declined to be identified for fear of generating even more commentary on social media, says it is wrong for people to post their views when the family is still grieving.
Rather than people saying it is the mother, it is the father, it's the stepmother, you guys are not our family. So you don't know what has been happening before this occur. We are sick of being on social media, by the way. Because at times you even want to respond, and then if you respond to those people, I am not in a position to expose myself to people to say, this is my family and this is what's happening. Because I don't know what people are going to put on my wall or my inbox. I might even end up committing suicide.
The relative of the slain siblings says those accusing their parents or relatives of killing their own family members should consider the consequences of their actions. She says people should wait until a court of law proves a suspect is guilty before rushing to conclusions.
Now, after this, he comes innocent. What is he going to do? He has to react to it. Whether he's going to be silent or he's going to do something, both of them, is not going to be good for him. Mental health is very important, but people do not think about it. I am also a mother. There is no way for you to carry a baby for 9 months and raise a kid up to 9 years, 7 years, 4 years, and then you kill them.
Speaking in Arabic, Police Chief General Majaka Ketch warns the public against misleading information about the case.
Are we as well active in social media?
Anyone who writes on social media information that is not related to the investigations we carried, saying it is a woman or those arrested or the brother of the children or whoever, these things must stop from today. It is not true and not fair.
South Sudan Police spokesman Major General Daniel Justin tells South Sudan in Focus the prosecution expects laboratory results on forensic evidence tomorrow.
We are waiting for the results from the forensic lab. And then after that, the case is summarized and then sent to court. So everything is going well.
General Akech says the 16 suspects previously arrested in connection with the case will be released and be recalled for questioning only if they are needed during the trial. According to the Bill of Rights in South Sudan's Transitional Constitution 2011, any person accused of a crime has the right to defend himself or herself in person or through a lawyer of their choosing or legal aid assigned to them by the court if they cannot afford legal representation. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, refugees continue to flee from Sudan. Find out why.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can you help someone dealing with depression?
I just give my time to that person and we discuss matter concerning that depression which that person is facing.
First of all, I'll find out what is depressing that person. And when I find out the root cause, of course, I try to advise the person according to what he or she is going through.
By counseling the person through counseling and then sharing ideas. Maybe sometimes going out for football or watching football, movies, such things can also help.
I recommend music, the music therapy. Music therapy in the sense that music has a way of giving a soothing feeling whenever the person listens to music.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Modou. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. The UN Refugee Agency reports increasing violence in Sudan's troubled Darfur has caused at least 2,500 refugees to flee to Chad for safety since the end of July. The agency says many of the newly arriving refugees had returned home from Chad to Darfur earlier in the year. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Land disputes in western Darfur's Masteri town reportedly killed at least 61 people and injured more than 88. The July 25 attacks are blamed on armed nomads who targeted the African farming communities, triggering the mass exodus of at least 2,500 people from Sudan to Chad. An estimated 20,000 people within western Darfur are reportedly affected by the ethnic-related unrest. The UN Refugee Agency says the nomads also reportedly burnt down houses in Masalit and in surrounding villages. UNHCR spokesman Baba Baloch says more than 80% of the refugees arriving in the Chadian border town of Adre are women, children, and elderly people.
Many have witnessed extreme violence. A 25-year-old woman told UNHCR staff that her husband was stabbed to death in front of her eyes, and she had to run for her life with her three children, making the journey to Chad riding a donkey for one whole day.
The UNHCR reports many of the newly arriving refugees had returned home to Darfur from eastern Chad earlier this year. Farmers who had been displaced by a conflict which broke out in 2003 and lasted 11 years had started to return home under a government-sponsored deal reached 2 months ago in time for the July-November planting season. Baloch says the situation inside West Darfur State has stabilized since the attacks but remains unpredictable. He says many of the returning internally displaced are staying in El Geneina, but are hesitant to go home until security improves.
Federal authorities in Khartoum have reportedly deployed additional forces to control and calm the situation, while a delegation from Masalit and the Arab tribal leaders arrived in Al Janina from Khartoum on August 4th and is conducting peace talks between both sides.
In the meantime, Baloch says the UNHCR and Chadian government are relocating the newly arrived refugees from the border areas to a refugee camp further inland. However, he says this is proving to be difficult because of poor road conditions and heavy rains. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Kenya will be among 70 countries that will participate in a World Health Organization-approved COVID-19 vaccine trial. That's according to WHO Kenya representative. This comes as Kenya is recording high numbers of COVID-19 positive cases and deaths. For VOA News, Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi.
Speaking in Nairobi, Kenya's World Health Organization representative Rudy Eggers said that Kenya has been selected among other African countries where the COVID-19 vaccine will be tried. Eggers said that already the vaccine is near completion and will be available to Kenyans very soon.
Kenya is very close to become part of the WHO Solidarity Trial. So this is a trial which more than 70 countries of the world participate in, comparing the different treatment modes that are available to us in a global setting. Approval for this trial is near completion, and as soon as that is completed, the trials will also start in Kenya.
A day after Russia announced the COVID-19 vaccine, the Kenyan government has said that it will initiate talks with Russia with the possibility of acquiring the vaccine, as the World Health Organization is yet to qualify Russia's vaccine. Chief Administrative Secretary, Ministry of Health, Mercy Mwangangi, said that Kenya, through Ministry of Foreign Affairs, will try out the vaccine and see if it is effective.
We, through the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, shall engage to find out, you know, what exactly vaccine has been deployed. Is it working? It becomes important always, every time you have a new vaccine, to test it. And I'm sure Russia itself is probably going to be conducting studies even as they deploy their vaccine to ensure that it is actually effective. Back here at home, we are very proud of our scientists. Yes, Kenya is participating. We're in the second phase and we have teams that are working.
Kenya's Ministry of Health yesterday, Wednesday, announced 18 deaths and 679 new COVID-19 cases, bringing the total number of deaths to 456, as well as 28,104 positive cases respectively. However, World Health Organization says that most African countries have less numbers because of incapacity to carry out massive testing. Mr. Eger said that 10 countries in Africa account for 89% of COVID-19 new cases, and that underreporting has made many African countries not to combat the virus in good time.
In the African region, more than 1 million cases and over 17,000 deaths have been reported. Across the continent, the COVID pandemic has taken varied trends. 10 countries in Africa account for 89% of new cases. However, the lack of adequate testing leads to underreporting of COVID cases and prevents the full understanding of the pandemic in Africa.
According to Mr. Eggers, WHO and other United Nations bodies have formed Global Procurement Consortium to help African countries get testing kits so they can manage the pandemic. WHO says the COVID-19 pandemic has disrupted services in healthcare facilities, and that most patients with pre-existing conditions are not accessing healthcare services in hospitals. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Physical and psychological burden of caring for many critically ill people who have COVID-19 is weighing heavily on healthcare workers around the world, including in South Africa. The country's hospitals are packed to capacity. While many South Africans are praising the sacrifices made by nurses and doctors, the pressure they are being subjected to are driving many to breaking point. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
Psychologist Zama Mbele says healthcare givers often break down ironically when they seem to be at the peak of their performance.
So what we almost want to look out for is combat readiness that does not subside. Somebody who's always kind of on the edge, always ready to respond, and always feeling like they have a lot of energy in a pervasive way, in a way that doesn't rest actually and or switch off.
Just before the person crashes, as he puts it, Mbele says they'll generally behave in certain ways.
A great deal of irritability, impatience, a whole host of tempered responses, people not being able to sleep, people not looking after their physical health, people not even eating.
Johannesburg psychiatrist Antoinette Mirich is also seeing increasing numbers of healthcare workers as patients.
They're worried about vulnerable family members. They're worried about contracting the illness and bringing it home. And the guilt associated with that is huge. They're also worrying about infecting patients, because what if they are symptomatic and then they accidentally infect a patient or infecting their colleagues? So there's a lot.
Cassie Chambers of the South African Depression and Anxiety Group says mental health issues remain severely stigmatized, especially with regard to professions such as healthcare.
Doctors are told that, you know, cowboys don't cry. Mental health is a weakness. So there's this stigma that they can't really say, hey, I need help, or I'm not coping, or I may be very anxious or depressed.
Bella says the doctor always hates becoming the patient.
One of the things that we know is that emergency services, doctors, police, there's no space to admit vulnerability, because oftentimes those are the types of jobs where you need to be the strong one and the hero.
He says the branding of healthcare workers as heroes because they're on the front lines of the war against coronavirus sometimes does more harm than good.
The way that we understand heroes is that they oftentimes have capes. They do not have weaknesses and vulnerabilities. And that narrative can really be put on individual nurses who are people, doctors who are people, even porters, that, well, you're a hero and so you're not allowed to be frightened.
As a result, Mbele explains, many in healthcare aren't able to allow themselves to step back from their work to rest, and so they end up endangering themselves and their patients. In representing doctors and nurses as heroes, he says, society could dehumanize them to a degree that it doesn't appreciate the risks they're taking and their vulnerabilities. Mirich believes the messaging of healthcare workers going into battle against the so-called unseen enemy is also potentially harmful.
We forget they're not soldiers. They're not willing to put their lives on the line. And they're humans just like you and me and everyone else. The majority of doctors, I mean, which I've spoken to, don't feel like heroes. You know, in fact, they might actually feel like lambs being sent to the slaughter.
Mirich says some of her patients who are doctors and nurses have told her they feel false, as if they're imposters, because they're often more terrified of the COVID wards than their patients. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm VOA health correspondent Linor Mudu. The World Health Organization and Africa Centers for Disease Control say we all can help fight the coronavirus pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and noses when we are in crowded areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
During this pandemic, the World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say if you have a fever, a cough, or have trouble breathing, you should stay at home and contact a healthcare facility. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest health news.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now take you to South Africa for this classic hit, Umkomboti, by Yvonne Chaka Chaka.
When my zamin, Umkomboti. When my zamin, Umkomboti. When my zamin, Umkomboti. When my zamin, Umkomboti.
We've been listening to Yvonne Chaka Chaka with the song Umkomboti. I'm John Tanz in Washington. Thanks for making us part of your evening. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers, because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Everybody,